Welcome to the Philharmonic Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 7:35 Greenwich Mean Time. Today is February 5th. And today being Friday, of course, it's the big picture long-term audio for the various different asset classes. First, let's have a review of what's been happening this week. And the week has been largely characterized by broad-based deleveraging in some of the better performing risk assets in particular, where we've seen concerted selling right across commodity and stock markets, and indeed in the corporate bond sector, with a corresponding strength in the US dollar, the yen, and the government bond sector has been comparatively steady, with the Eurobunds breaking upwards from their trading range and improving on that performance in here today, up at 124.5. This was an interesting week from the point of view of the markets which sold off most aggressively, and those were largely focused in Southern Europe, which have the higher deficits in the Eurozone, with Greece, Portugal, and Spain selling off most aggressively. The Spanish banks, Santander, for example, had rallied in the region of 200% in the last year, and had gone right back up to test its previous high and pulled back very sharply this week. And that, because that has such a large weighting in the European bank sector, the European banks also broke down from their range, and they're being led lower by those Spanish banks. Interestingly, where you have some very concerted selling in Southern Europe, Northern Europe, particularly Scandinavia, has been far less hit by the selling pressure. And while just about every market was down well in excess of 1%, some in excess of 2%, and others in excess of 3% today, and indeed yesterday, the outlook remains that we are in this corrective phase, but those countries that are most liable to become the subject of regulatory scrutiny from the European Commission in Europe are the subject of the greatest selling pressure, and those least likely to come under that forceful fiscal tightening are some of the better relative performers, while all markets remain in this corrective phase. In Asia, we saw that the majority of markets are also pulling back in a corrective phase and remain within this reversionary process towards the 200-day moving averages. Some of those better performing markets have perhaps a little bit further to come back than others. And we outlined earlier this week three possible scenarios, with a percentage of whether percentage likelihood of how likely these outcomes are going to be. And those outcomes were along the lines of 40% likelihood that markets would be able to push back up to sustain their upward break, 40% that they would range in zombie-like fashion for a relatively prolonged period, and a 20% chance that we would see them break through their moving averages in a meaningful way and retrace a large part of the advances that they put in last week. And of course, we are going to have markets that fall into all three categories. But perhaps the biggest question is whether whether Wall Street or some of those larger cap markets are going to do just that. Well, with the S&P, it still has a relative cushion before it is actually retraced to its mean, and there is still potential that it will find support in that region. But the Stoxx 600 has already retraced to its 200-day moving average, and it's in an area of potential support. But we do need to see upward dynamics to signal that there is demand coming back into these markets. With those 200-day moving averages, which we have emphasized for just about every week, for particularly the last 6 months because of that overbought condition, We're looking for them to find support in the region of those 200-day moving average. Those levels are not sacrosanct, and on previous occasions, we've often seen that that markets have pulled back below their 200-day moving averages, but found support in the region and then been able to push back up above them when demand begins to get the upper hand once more. What we do not want to see is that markets distribute below the 200-day moving average and then break downwards once more. That would then be a major question as to the integrity of the overall bullish hypothesis. It is also worth mentioning that monetary conditions remain extraordinarily accommodative, and while that is not going to stop some of those weaker economies from falling in and out of recession as they go through the rehabilitation process, it does create the conditions for some of the better performing assets to outperform over the medium to longer term. And for some of those better performing assets, we are being presented, or we're being set up for the next good buying opportunity. Particularly, for example, with, say, a market like Chile, which we've highlighted as being relatively overextended, but also being one of the best performing stock markets in the world and one of the few to actually break upwards to new high ground. Well, it posted a weekly downside Q reversal this week. The Chilean peso has weakened quite considerably against the dollar over the last 3 weeks, and there's a better than even chance that we're now going to see a reversionary process towards the 200-day moving average, which would likely entail it sustaining the break upwards above those previous highs. And once that reversionary process is complete, we're probably going to be presented with another good buying opportunity. And that's the kind of action that we want to see in the better performing markets. But that's not going to be the case for laggards, and we see that some of those Southern European markets have broken down really quite sharply, and their convalescence could take a more prolonged period, and the likelihood that they are going to range in a volatile fashion over the coming months is, I think, really quite high. We can compare the kind of action that we're now being presented with to the S&P back into late 2003 and 2004, where it went through a volatile ranging phase with a downward bias. It broke through its 200-day moving average, but never fell below it to any great extent. The greatest temptation, of course, will be to become increasingly bearish the further down these markets come. But we do need to remember that there remains the strong likelihood that we are in a new bull market, that this is a medium-term correction within an overall bullish market for those better performing assets, and that we're being set up for the next good buying opportunity. We can anticipate that sentiment is going to get increasingly worse the further down these markets continue to push. But we need to resist the temptation to allow that sentiment to affect our technical our analysis, our behavioral analysis of the market. When we do start to see those upward dynamics, that will be a clear signal that demand is returning. We do not see them yet. This corrective phase is not over, but we will know what it looks like when it is, and we will need to have the fortitude to act on the signals when we see them. Over the last 6 months, we've seen that there's been an inverse correlation between risk assets and the US dollar, and to one extent or another, the yen and some of those other weaker high liquidity currency markets. And with the dollar strengthening in here, that is putting pressure on speculators. It is causing a deleveraging process very much, probably on a smaller scale, a considerably smaller scale to what we saw back in 2008, but the parallels are really quite similar. And we've seen that the bulk of the selling pressure has been in those markets that have been most prone to or have the greatest problems in their fiscal budgets in Europe, and where we've seen other large selling pressure has been in the commodity markets, where some of the industrial metals have pulled back rather violently, and this is a larger pullback within the overall uptrend. And they are also becoming a little bit oversold in the short term, but again, we need to see those upward dynamics just tell us that demand is returning. Gold is an interesting case here because it peaked in the region of $1,200. It pulled back and now it's reverted to its 200-day moving average, and it has so far sustained the move above the psychological $1,000 level. Palladium, which has led the precious metal market of late, found support today in the region of $380 and rallied to the region of $400 in here, and that is also it is finding support in the region of the upper side of the previous range, the if there were a mid cap or a midpoint danger line a stop in the middle of that previous range, it would not have been penetrated in here today. And with a leading market beginning looking oversold, beginning to find support, and gold in the region of its 200-day moving average, I nibbled at the market in here today because I think that there is at least short-term potential for a reversionary move in favor of precious metals. And potentially we could be in an area where they could begin to find support. But this is catching a falling knife type territory, and we do not have the upper dynamics just yet, so we don't have any confirmation of that. So in doing that, I know that I am attempting to anticipate the market, but I think that there's probably a 50-50 chance that we're in the region of at least a short-term low for some of these precious metals. Elsewhere in the commodity sector, sugar pulled back extremely violently this week and posted a weekly downside key reversal. We've seen concerted selling pressure in the energy sector, where earlier this week it looked like we had a significant upward dynamic when oil was up in the region of $77. It has pulled back sharply in the last 2 days and moved briefly below $70 earlier today. The progression of higher reaction or equal lows, higher or equal reaction lows remains in place for that West Texas crude, and we need to give it a little bit of room, but until it sustains a move below the sort of $69 to $70 level, the ranging uptrend can probably continue to be given the benefit of the doubt, even though we do have these extraordinarily volatile moves inside the range. When we look longer term, the markets that have done best over the last year have been concentrated in Asia and commodity producing Latin America. These markets have also pulled back less this week. So there is still potential that they will pull back more violently if this turns into a more persistent decline in some of those larger cap markets, particularly Wall Street. But for the moment, their pullback has been not to the same extent as some of those European markets, for example. And they are still in this mean reversion type process. Some of them have reverted to their means, and we're looking for them to find support more or less in the region of those moving averages. But when we look at, for example, the spreads between the 2 and the 10-year, we see that monetary conditions remain extraordinarily accommodative in a number of OECD countries and are beginning to tighten in places like China and India. And while that may offer a temporary headwind to stock markets in those regions. It's also a vote of confidence in the integrity of those economies that central banks feel that they can begin to remove the stimulus and that the economy can stand on its own two feet. So we are also being set up for the next big buying opportunity in some of those better performing markets. The greatest urbanization in history is underway. This is a secular theme. The advent of billions of new consumers into the global economy will change the world. And in that regard, this time really is different because we're seeing not that we're not going to have a big blowout when this move becomes overextended, when the world is betting on the urbanization theme and it becomes something that that people are talking about at dinner parties. But in that regard, it certainly won't be different this time. But this really is changing the world. Big bull markets have a big bull story, and that story does change the world. Just like we had in the tech boom, where the internet has changed the way we live our lives. Just back in when we had the railway boom in the 18 and early 1900s, that also changed the way people lived. And the urbanization theme, where we're getting an additional 3 billion consumers entering the global economy as consumers, is a major theme that is changing the way that we live our lives. It's changing the per capita consumption of commodities. It's changing the way that people behave in some of those large population countries. And it is providing incredible opportunities for companies positioned to benefit from global growth. And that is obviously affecting the resources shares, and they have been among the better performing shares over the last year, and commodity related markets have been among the better performing markets over the last year. But we're also seeing that, for example, China and India have massive potential to grow as consumer economies, and China is beginning to move its emphasis from infrastructure to social security and health. I saw a fascinating statistic during the week that for every dollar spent on healthcare, that $2 were created in the consumer economy in China. And that's an incredible multiplier effect. And it is exactly that kind of investment that will help to bolster the consumer economy in China over the coming years and indeed decades. The medium-term correction that we are in right now is deleveraging a large part of the speculative excess that's been built up over the last year, and we really did have a remarkable move in 2009. Just how long this takes, and to the extent that it is volatile, and we could easily see a large number of upward dynamics and progressions of lower rally highs, but provided markets can hold the majority of the gains posted over the last year, then this can be classed as little more than a rather extreme medium-term correction. And the longer-term bullish environment will remain intact. Looking at the agricultural sector, while we've seen that sugar and cocoa have rallied remarkably over the last year and pulled back rather violently, the grain complex is relatively depressed and has been ranging for a considerable period. And that is also an area where we will see an increase in consumption over the medium to longer term. The pullback in the grain prices has also affected some of those fertilizer companies, and that has been, I think, what we could class as a sleeper sector for much of the last year. But if we do start to see that these grain prices are starting to move upwards once more, then that will almost certainly begin to attract interest in the fertilizer companies. Of course, not all commodities have pulled back this week, and this week we also saw that lumber pushed on really very emphatically and broke upwards once more out of the most recent of its trading ranges, and really does look to be now in a new bull market, having broken a 5-year progression of lower rally highs. It's a little bit easier in here today, but there is the appeal of the commodity sector as a non-correlated asset class. And while we do have the industrial commodities being highly correlated to global growth, some of the others offer that diversification. And it does look like that we're seeing some investors beginning to move into some non-correlated assets as we remain in this medium-term correction. As I said, we're going to see some markets fill out just about every category of major pullback, but provided we see Wall Street finding support in the region of its 200-day moving average, we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the bull market hypothesis for the majority of other better performing stock markets and probably commodities as well. The US dollar now has a progression of higher reaction lows, and it's also got higher highs. And until they're broken, the inverse correlation between stock markets and the dollar will remain under pressure. So where it will continue to pressure some of those stock markets and indeed commodities. So watching what currencies are doing will, I think, be increasingly important when monitoring the interrelationships and the integrity on and indeed consistency characteristics of risk type assets. Government bonds have strengthened this week, and we saw bunds breaking upwards, but that masks the inherent weakness of the market in that governments are increasing the supply of government bonds following, for US treasuries at least, a 30-year bull market. And while they are a safe haven in the short term, as long as we remain in this corrective phase, the question remains as to how strong they're going to be when central banks retreat from their quantitative easing. Who is going to be the new marginal buyer for government bonds generally? And that does suggest that we're going to see yields pushing upwards over the medium to longer term, if for no other reason than we are returning to a position of global growth, and central banks no longer need to have this quantitative easing. I think that if you were to be a long-term bull of treasury bonds, one really would have to be an avid believer in the long-term Japan-style deflationary argument, and I'm not in that camp. But on the other hand, neither do we have the evidence just yet that we're going to see significantly higher yields in the short to medium term, whereas it does look likely over the medium to longer term. A sustained move above 5% on US treasuries would break that long-term progression of lower highs. It would also offer a significant headwind to stock markets, because the yield would then start to be become more attractive for equity investors, and it could begin to draw money away from the stock market. We're not there just yet, but it is certainly a warning light to watch out for, as would be surging oil prices. And also, we do not have surging oil prices at the moment. So we have extraordinarily accommodative conditions. Government bond yields are in no way competitive to the potential returns from stock markets, and commodity prices have pulled back sharply. So the conditions are there to support a bull market in risk type assets, and the likelihood remains that this is a medium-term correction rather than an outright reversal for the vast majority of those risk assets. And provided we see the majority of those markets finding support in the region of their 200-day moving averages, we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to that bullish hypothesis, that longer-term bullish hypothesis. And I think with that, I will leave you for the evening. I wish all the best to all of you.